Good day and thank you for joining us for a very special edition of The Front Page. I'm your host, Racing Post editor Tom Kerr. Over recent months, The Racing Post has spent a great deal of time scrutinising affordability checks. These, of course, are the most consequential change to gambling regulation in Britain for decades. Their introduction threatens to devastate racing's funding and to drive many thousands of racing bettors to the black market or away from the regulated market. Ever since the checks were first proposed in the White Paper, the government and the Gambling Commission have sought to downplay the impact they will have on consumers and on racing, insisting that they will only affect a very small percentage of punters, that the checks will be frictionless, and that the damage to racing will be limited. But experts and those within the sport have warned repeatedly that some of these claims and promises do not stand up to scrutiny. So what is the truth? Over the last week, The Racing Post ran a series of special reports scrutinising the key claims made by the government and the Gambling Commission in the White Paper and the current consultation on affordability checks. And I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by the authors of those special reports, senior writer Lee Mortised and industry editor Bill Barber. Welcome both.
Thanks, Tom.
We will start with the first piece that we wrote, which scrutinised one of the most important claims about affordability checks. And this is the claim that only a very small number of bettors will ever encounter the checks. And I'll quote here the gambling minister, Stuart Andrew, who said in the pages of The Racing Post, 8 out of 10 players will face no checks at all, and only about 3% of the highest spending accounts will ever have more detailed checks. This number, this 3% number, has been cited repeatedly by DCMS, by government, and by the Gambling Commission to stress the limited reach and impact of affordability checks. Lee, you looked into this number, and I suppose that the starting point that we have repeated countless times, and that punters have told us countless times, is that in many ways this number is actually academic, because the Gambling Commission and DCMS choose to focus purely on what is going to happen in the future, whereas, as we know and as punters know, thousands upon thousands of bettors have already been confronted with affordability checks.
Yeah, I think you can break this down into three sections, Tom. One, where we are already in terms of affordability checks. Two, how that 3% figure was reached. And three, why the 3% figure is almost irrelevant anyway. The first point you raise is that, to an extent, this is a door being closed long after the horse has bolted. The 3% figure is a future projection for what the impact of enhanced checks will be once affordability checks are formally brought into the landscape. The reality, of course, is that affordability checks are already there. They're already significant, and their scope is already massively beyond that which the White Paper predicts for the future. For over 2 years now, punters have been significantly impacted by affordability checks. Online punters, but also betting shop punters as well. For over 2 years now, punters have been finding that bookmakers are asking them to present financial documents, personal financial documents, payslips, P60s, in some cases even more than that, if they are to be allowed to continue betting. We spoke in the piece to William Woodhams, the chief exec of FitzStairs, who spoke about 50% of his new clients are not agreeing to submit checks. We had a survey of punters earlier in the year which showed that not far short of 1 in 5 punters had already experienced affordability checks. Yeah. And we know that not only is this impacting individual punters, it is impacting horse racing because, as we've reported many times and everybody knows, betting and horse racing are commercially and financially inextricably linked. If punters are not betting, if they're moving away from betting, if they're going to the black market, which I highlighted earlier, that will consequently have an impact on horse racing. So even before you get to the 3% projection for the future, affordability checks are a thing in the present.
And this causes a huge amount of frustration for punters. It causes a huge amount of frustration, frankly, for us reporting on it, because we are in the difficult position of simultaneously talking about a new piece of regulation and the form it will take, while also confronting the reality that the proposal that is being consulted upon is basically already in existence. Now, nonetheless, though, our piece is focused on this forthcoming regulation. We certainly wanted to make clear that affordability checks are not hypothetical, they are real, and they have already affected, by all indications, far more than 3% of racing punters. However, what's being consulted on by the Gambling Commission and what was proposed in the White Paper is the future shape of affordability checks and the future shape of regulation around betting. So that is what we've mainly focused on in our pieces. Then we took this 3% figure. This is the idea that only 3% of the most active accounts will be confronted with enhanced checks. We very quickly found that even on the most basic mathematical level, there were issues with that number.
Yeah, completely. So if you look at how the 3% figure was arrived at in the White Paper, the Gambling Commission, the gambling industry sector regulator, requested from bookmakers data that it could use to make predictions, projections, estimates for the government to use in the White Paper. Almost 6 million betting accounts were used, and from those accounts, the Gambling Commission sought to predict with the government how many accounts would hit the two thresholds that are key to enhanced checks, what we consider to be proper, meaningful, serious affordability checks. There is one threshold whereby when punters spend or have a net loss of £2,000 over a course of 90 days, and the second one is a net loss of £1,000 in 24 hours. Those two cohorts were assessed separately. The first one, the figures that the Gambling Commission got from bookmakers suggested that 3.2% of accounts, of active accounts, of accounts in which one bet, if you like, had been placed in the course of a year, 3.2% of accounts had hit that £2,000 net loss in 90 days threshold. Mm. The data showed that 2.0% of accounts had hit the £1,000 in 24 days threshold. So you have two separate cohorts, one showing 3.2%, one showing 2.0%. How, therefore, do we get a 3% estimate? Because I wasn't great at maths, but I know 3.2% at 2.0 equals 5.2. You can, of course, argue, and quite rightly, that it wouldn't be simple as adding 3.2 at 2.0, because there would be crossover.
Some of the people who spend £1,000 in 24 hours are also going to spend £2,000 in 90 days.
Exactly that.
It stands to reason that would be the case.
Logic dictates that.
But the reverse must surely be true.
The reverse must be true. You cannot have total crossover. And in fact, the government accepts that there can't be total crossover. And yet, we have a situation where 3.2 at 2.0 doesn't only equal 3.2, it equals 3.0. So you have a situation whereby the estimate, the number of accounts that will be hit by enhanced checks, is actually lower than the most significant of the two cohorts. Now, I, in the process of working through this piece, asked both the Gambling Commission and the DCMS to tell me how 3.2 at 2.0 equals 3.0. The Gambling Commission, in effect, referenced the fact that it had used data brought forward from bookmakers, 3% figure was reached. If you want to know any more, ask the DCMS. So I then went to the DCMS, whose answer was akin to telling me what I had already asked in the question, i.e. it was a very Sir Humphrey Appleby type answer that didn't answer the question. And this is pivotal because, as we've said all along, the 3% prediction is central to the government's strategy and its communications. And if the government and its gambling industry regulator are unable to explain how it actually reached a 3.0% figure, then there is no foundation for that figure, and it immediately reduces any confidence anyone can have in what they're doing.
Let's move on to the next issue with this. Bill, the number is based on the definition of an active account. Now, explain why that raises issues when the gambling minister, for example, is telling Racing Post readers that only 3% of them will ever be confronted by affordability checks.
Well, the main issue is that the definition of an active account is an account that's had could have had as little as one bet in a year. And there's a study called Patterns of Play that I'm sure we'll mention later. If you look at the patterns of play data, there's quite a large percentage of accounts only have one bet a year, presumably on the Grand National or on the Premier League or something. It's something like 20%. And even going up to just five bets a year, you that's a pretty significant chunk of accounts. So when they say it's 3% of active accounts, they're completely underestimating the number of actual committed bettors.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to racing and committed bettors, the people who help fund the sport, it's going to be considerably more than 3%. It's
We can't say what the percentage will be ultimately, because this has not been assessed. They did not assess what percentage of people who are active monthly will be affected by this. The other element to do with an active account, which was raised in the series, was that for many racing punters, you do not have a betting account, you have betting accounts. And therefore, if 3% of accounts are affected, that does not correspond to 3% of punters affected, but rather 3% of accounts. So for those who have multiple accounts, the probability of being affected increases once again.
Yes, absolutely. So it's somewhat disingenuous of those saying it's only going to be 3%. And it's the other thing that has struck me in the debate over this is that it is not being presented by some of the people, and the Gambling Commission would be at the top of the list. It's not being presented as an estimate, it's being presented as a fact, and a fact that therefore you cannot be argued or challenged. And that's more than frustrating. These are estimates based on checks that in some cases don't actually exist yet. Just to present this as this is a fact and it can't be challenged, it's dangerous to the horse racing industry, for starters. It's dangerous to punters, and it's dangerous to horse race.
And on that danger to the horse racing industry, the third, if you like, chunk of, I think, the real concern about the 3% figure is that in terms of horse racing, 3% is largely irrelevant. We know it's going to be more than 3%. But we also know that the percentage of people who regularly bet on horse racing who will be impacted by this will be far greater than 3%. So again, Will Woodhams of FitzDares, he made the point that of his client base, and it is not a client base that is reflective of the industry. He would say that himself. They are a very heavily racing-based bookmaker and a bookmaker of high net worth clients. You know, theirs are the punters that do tend to have proper meaty bets. But he reckoned of his clients, 80% of his punters would trigger enhanced checks. He said across the industry as a whole, he forecast 20 to 40%. But he also made the point that what is key is who the punters are that are going to trigger checks. And quite obviously, it is punters who stake the most. His view is that it's going to be £50 plus punters who will be most impacted. And he went on to explain how they are key to racing funding. Racing, if you're watching this and you're somebody who likes a £1 treble on ITV Racing every Saturday, that's fantastic. But with the best one in the world, you are not making a massive contribution to the funding of horse racing. Those who stake more, obviously, contribute more. And those punters are the ones who are going to be impacted by enhanced checks. Those are the ones who are going to be faced with a decision. Do I hand over personal financial documents? Do I say, well, look, this is something I enjoy doing, but I don't need to do it, so I'm going to stop doing it. Or do I go to the black market? Mm. And Will makes a point that those key punters, those high-staking punters, are going to be most impacted by this, are the ones who contribute around 90% of racing's media rights income. So again, for horse racing, this is of colossal importance. The Gambling Commission has stated on the record that it doesn't really have much interest in that. And to an extent, you can see why. It's the gambling industry regulator. Its job isn't to look after horse racing, but the government does have a job to look after horse racing. It has stated that it wants to do no damage to horse racing. Rishi Sunak said that at the Thoroughbred Industry Awards earlier in the year. But again, as I said in the column today, actions speak louder than words, even if those actions are wholly unintended.
Absolutely. And this leads us on to the second part in our series. If we have established that the 3% figure is based on some questionable mathematics and also is of dubious or indeed little to no relevance to racing punters, then it moves on to the nature of the checks themselves. These are the affordability checks that punters are going to be confronted with. And in the white paper, and ever since, government has promised that these checks, for the vast majority, would be frictionless. And by frictionless, they mean they will happen largely or entirely in the background and cause minimal to no inconvenience to punters. The idea being that whereas existing affordability checks, where individuals have to send in sensitive financial documentation with a very high level of people refusing to do so, will be streamlined and therefore compliance will go up enormously and the impact on betting and racing and punters will be significantly diminished. Now, in theory, of course, this is an excellent middle ground. This is something that will significantly mitigate the impact of affordability checks on both individuals and the industries reliant on betting. However, our investigation has raised a lot of questions about how these frictionless checks might work in practice.
Yeah, they don't know how to do it. I mean, that is ultimately the key. For the government, frictionless, again, has been a key thrust of its communications message. Stuart Andrew, the gambling minister, has repeated that. He said it in a Racing Post column earlier in the year. He has said it to parliamentarians in the DCMS Select Committee. And their theory, their assumption, and so much of this whole white paper is based on assumptions. Their assumptions are that credit reference agencies will be pivotal to all this, that a system based on credit account turnover details will be very useful in ensuring that bookmakers can do all this without interfering with customers. They believe, they're assuming, in effect, that the software, the technology already exists to do this.
Now, it should be said, though, in the white paper, when it was published in April, it very sort of clearly implied that the solution did not exist at this point. It basically said, we're going to work with the financial services sector to work out how frictionless checks could be enabled. Ever since then, government, Gambling Commission have repeatedly stated the checks will be frictionless. This is a promise. Yeah. The checks will be frictionless. However, at no point has there been any light shed on how this hitherto non-existent technology, non-existent form of check will actually work in practice. And that's a fundamental thing. And the Gambling Commission has taken issue with the Racing Post reporting on this, and it has stated once again that checks will be frictionless without once again providing any detail about how it will. And we spoke to a wide range of lawyers and gambling industry analysts, all of whom, I think it's correct to say, all of whom stated that they were unclear how these frictionless checks would work in practice.
Yeah, Tom, I can state here now that I will have a perfect flat six pack in 6 weeks' time. Unless I can show you how I'm going to do it, it's largely irrelevant. If I'm having a cream cake every day, it's not going to happen. It's fine for the government and the Gambling Commission to say these will be frictionless. They don't know how to do it. Bill and I were sat in the committee room, the DCMS committee room, where Stuart Andrew, the gambling minister, was asked, how will these checks be frictionless? And his response was, that's what we're consulting on at the moment. In effect, what the government has done is it signed up to buy a very expensive house without having any knowledge of how it's going to pay for it. It's committed itself to a goal, to an outcome. It's gone as far as creating a legislative process, and it doesn't know how to do it.
So what do we know? We do know that in the consultation, they talk about credit reference agencies providing data such as an estimate of overall disposable income, and they talk about current account turnover, CATO. This is a data set held by credit reference agencies. There's significant doubts about whether what the Gambling Commission says bookmakers need to know about individuals' finances can be provided by CATO or by credit reference agencies generally.
Completely. So, for a start, CATO doesn't incorporate, doesn't bring in 3 out of 10 accounts. So, for those people,
then it's not signed up to.
No, can't help at all. Yeah. But then for those where it is relevant, where it is a factor, what it tells you is how much money goes into an account. It tells you what's coming in. It tells you, you know, what your income is, if you like. It doesn't tell you what's going out, where the money's coming from. It doesn't give you the details. It gives you a bare figure. For a whole chunk of people, not least those who aren't betting based on a regular weekly, monthly income, it's therefore irrelevant. For a lot of the key racing punting demographic, the older people, again, it would be largely irrelevant. So it's something that, it's there, but it's not a solid foundation on which to build this house.
And one last thing on this. I know people are probably sick to death of hearing about credit reference checks and so forth, but this is a very important point. Will the use of credit reference agency checks result in people having difficulty borrowing money in future because of marks left on their files by the checks that bookmakers carry out?
Very possibly, yeah. So again, we spoke to lots of lawyers and experts in the sector, and their view was that almost certainly it would do yes. Now again, the Gambling Commission has said, no, that won't happen, it's not a concern. But they don't say how, they don't say why, they don't explain. As Bill was saying earlier on, they present something as fact in a way that Donald Trump presented things as fact when he was president, and he is doing now, but there's no substance behind the fact. If they know how things are going to be done, then tell us. You know, when we ask questions, give us detailed answers. Yeah. Don't just repeat what they've said before.
And this is an important point to make as well, because, as I mentioned before, the Gambling Commission has said the Racing Post is in balance. It suggested that our coverage is creating misunderstandings and misleading racing customers. Bill, how many times have we put these questions to the Gambling Commission? How many times have we offered them the opportunity to provide clarity around simple factual questions? These are not questions of ideology or principle. It's about mechanics. And we have gone to them time and time again and said, can you shed light on this? Will you speak to us on these topics? And what is the response?
I mean, we've been to them on several occasions, and the response tends to be, everything's in the consultation, everything's in the white paper. There's been, and it's basically computer says no. They will not expand. They've just said, it's all out there. Read it, and you'll find out. That's basically been the response all along.
Why is this important, Lee? Why is it important whether checks are frictionless or whether people end up having to provide documentation?
Well, I mean, the key thing, Tom, is that if the checks aren't frictionless, if they're not going on in the background without us having to do anything, a lot of people, when faced with the question, will you, in effect, when bookmakers say to them, listen, will you help us out here by providing that P60, that bank account, your mortgage statement, if people are having to do that, a lot of those people will not go along with the process. We know that because they're already not going along with the process. We know that from the survey that we've done. We know that from what bookmakers are saying. We know that from what Will Woodhams is saying. Yeah. If people are asked to actually physically do something, to actually divulge some of their personal financial information, the sort of information that they would normally only expect to have to divulge if they're applying for a mortgage or looking to do a new rent agreement. If they're asked to do that, in effect, to carry on simply with a hobby, with a pastime, they will very often say no. And we know that because they're already saying no. And that is of enormous consequence, not only for those individuals, but as I said all along, for the racing industry.
In the final part of our series, we assessed what the impact on racing of affordability checks would be. Stuart Andrew, the Minister with Responsibility for Sport and Gambling, he wrote in the Racing Post earlier this year, I said in April the white paper's impact on the sport would be minimal, and I stand by this. In the white paper itself, the DCMS estimated the damage to the sport in the first year would be between £8.4 and £14.9 million. Not an inconsiderable sum, but for a sport like racing, within the sort of yearly fluctuation, that does not cause existential issues or even necessarily have that pronounced an impact on things such as prize money. The DCMS's impact assessment was made up of three elements, a 5 to 8 million reduction in the levy, a 3 to 6 million reduction in media rights, and the balance comprising a reduction in sponsorship. Bill, we assessed this number, we scrutinised it, we spoke to a wide range of experts. It's fair to say there are a number of issues, some of them very fundamental. The most obvious, the most glaring, is that DCMS appear to have completely misunderstood how media rights work in racing.
Yes, absolutely. When the white paper came out, it had this impact assessment of the checks on racing. And you looked at the 14.9 million figure, excuse me, and your eyebrows were raised because this was nothing like the amount that figures in racing had said that the checks that were already in place were having on the sport. And then when you look at the split between levy, media rights and sponsorship that you mentioned, and you in the white paper you look at how they worked it out, you're immediately thinking this doesn't make sense, this isn't logical. Because the white paper itself sets out racing's different income streams, and it says that the levy provides, I think, 6% of racing's income and media rights, 11%. And yet in the impact assessment, the impact on levy is much greater than media rights. And immediately thinking, well, how, that doesn't make sense, it isn't logical. It's probably rare for a journalist, but in the government's defence, the white papers took so long to do. The way that media rights have their basis has changed, and it would appear that the government has been using the wrong basis for media rights. They used to be based on a sort of per stream basis, and now they're based on turnover. So anything, if you've got checks that affect the amount that people bet, that's going to have an effect on turnover. So it isn't logical for media rights to, for the impact on media rights of the checks to be half of what it is on the levy. It should be a lot more. When I spoke to Paul Leyland of Regulus Partners, who are a very well-respected industry analyst group, and he basically said that rather than 3 to 6 million, even just on the basis that the DCMS used, the impact could be 20 million. So already you're looking at assuming that the impact on levy and sponsorship are as the DCMS says, you're looking at approaching 30 million for the impact on horse racing.
And DCMS has effectively admitted it's redoing its sums here.
Yes, so I, as part of my piece, I contacted the DCMS and said, how did you work out this figure? And they basically said, well, we decided that the impact on media rights would not be at the same proportionate rate as the levy, but they did say we are looking at finding out the latest figures for the financial impact, because this is all part of the work that's been done on the levy. At the same time the white paper came out, the government report said it would look at levy reform to make sure that racing's income from betting wasn't damaged. So they're looking at this figure again in terms of the levy reform.
So basically an admission there that the number is likely an underestimate. Mm. Now, the misunderstanding of how media rights work, issue number one, and very clearly problematic in terms of calculating that 14.9 million figure. Issue number two, I think, no less troublesome, because this pertains to how they worked out what the reduction in racing's income from gambling would be based on a reduction in gross gambling yield, i.e. the profits made from gambling across the industry. Tell us where the issue lies here.
So basically they've come up with a figure or a reduction in gross gambling yield for the entire industry from these checks of 6 to 11%, and that's all gambling on absolutely everything from slot machines to greyhounds to football, whatever.
Yeah,
and so they've applied that to a figure for racing's gross gambling yield to work out how much that would hit levy and sponsorship as well, I think. But that sort of ignores the fact that racing has a different clientele, and it has a different makeup to other forms of gambling. And this goes back to the patterns of play report that I mentioned earlier, which was compiled by, amongst others, Professor David Forrest and Professor Ian McHale from the University of Liverpool. Now, last year, myself and Lee were at an event at which Professor Forrest spoke, and he gave details about how racing's demographics, and racing compared to other sports has a much older demographic. So you're going to have people there who a lot of, you know, there'll be retired people there betting using savings and assets rather than salary.
So they're more likely to have to prove, yes, income by submitting documents rather than, if frictionless checks do work in some capacity, they're much less likely to work for that cohort.
Absolutely. And then compared to, say, football, in terms of both volume and in terms of profits, the top 1% of racing punters provide as quite a startling. And
I have the numbers here. The top 1% of horse racing bettors provided 59% of total stakes and 52% of gross gambling yield, and 76% of revenue came from just 5% of bettors. So even if you apply the 3% figure onto that model, you have 3% accounting for well over half of racing's revenue in terms of the customers affected.
Yes, and it's basically racing by its very nature has more high staking punters. Football, you're going to have a lot of £5 accumulator bets on a Saturday.
Yeah, and Will Woodham's put this very succinctly in his quotes when he said, unless racing is going to go out and find 3 million people willing to put a £5 acca on a Saturday, then it is going to be very heavily affected by these proposals.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, we want as many people betting on horse racing as we can, but that's going to take a while.
And so the summary then is that the impact assessment is based on a questionable 3% figure, frictionless assertions which have yet to be proven, a misunderstanding of media rights, and then a one-size-fits-all reduction in gambling yield when racing is completely different to many of the other types of gambling assessed.
Yes, there are a combination of factors here which when brought together and looked at, just I think it's very easy to argue that the impact on racing is going to be much greater than is contained in the white paper. Yeah, I think three times as much as the 14.9 million is, I think, is a reasonable assumption.
Since we published these pieces, Lee, what's been the reaction from within racing and beyond?
Racing has been pretty quiet throughout this whole process publicly. Now, obviously, I'm not privy to what's going on behind the scenes, and we are told that there's lots of communication, lots of dialogue, but publicly, racing has been pretty quiet. Bookmakers have been pretty quiet through this process publicly. I can't tell you how hard it was to get anyone within the bookmaking industry to talk off the record, let alone on the record. So thank heavens for Will Woodhams. There might be any number of reasons why that is the case. Some might just not realise how significant this is. Some will have this terror of the gambling commission, certainly within the bookmaking industry that we've heard about in the past. And I think some will be tippy-toeing around government in particular, not wanting to upset or annoy government at a delicate time. But the reality is that there isn't really much of a public campaign on this outside of what the media and principally the Racing Post are doing. And I think that in itself is a matter of great concern.
The one other group we should absolutely acknowledge that is extremely vocal on this is racing punters.
Absolutely. Well, I've been here for many summers and a lot more winters, and I have never known as much reader feedback on this than there has been on this subject. Our emails are full of it every day. They are largely singing with one voice. They are enormously energised by them, principally, I think, because it is already happening to them. They are already experiencing it. This is not some theoretical future problem. This is in the here and now, and it promises to get worse. And these are people who, in some cases, for decades, have enjoyed betting on horse racing as a perfectly legal, honourable and pleasurable activity. And I think those people are not only offended that the state, in effect, is saying to them, can you prove to us that you can afford to do this? But they are utterly bewildered and perplexed as to why it's happening.
And Bill, just finally, one of the most frustrating things about this is that over the last few months, we have been amplifying those concerns. We have been raising areas of uncertainty, of confusion, or of issues with calculations or proposals that seem more theoretical than based in reality. The engagement, I touched on this before, but the engagement with those concerns, the concerns of punters, the concerns of racing, and even just questions of process, practical fact, has just been extremely wanting.
Yes, absolutely. Again, it's very frustrating that basically the response to questions and challenges has been that this is all facts. We're consulting about how we're going to do this. These are facts, and any challenge to these is almost an affront to
simply believe us.
Yes, absolutely.
Why don't you just simply believe
us? Yes, absolutely. That's, you know, trust us. These are facts, and anybody, you know, you're trying to undermine the government's policy was one line I saw of critics of this area. It's very frustrating, it's bewildering, but it's deeply worrying as well.
Absolutely. Lee, Bill, thank you both very much. Excellent pieces, and we will link to them in the description, so please do give them a read if you haven't already seen them. As is well known to the Gambling Commission, there is a standing invitation for Chief Executive Andrew Rhodes to speak to the Racing Post. I would love to have him on this show for an unedited question and answer exchange where we can shed some light on these proposals and particularly the matters of process which we've highlighted on today's show. Thank you very much for tuning in and joining us. We'll be back again next week with a discussion of all the big racing stories. But until then, goodbye.